It's hard for a DMO because, you know, being the county, to be fair with everybody, but you also need to lean on your largest assets. And so spreading that stuff out proportionately is something that I think sometimes goes unnoticed because everyone's trying to be fair to everybody, but that's not always the most correct way to do the promoting.
Welcome again, everyone, to the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. We're glad to have you back. I'm also excited. We have a great guest today. It's going to be a little bit different show than we've had in the past because instead of having a destination or a technology that serves destinations, we actually have a business that is reliant upon a destination and that fits very importantly into the destination. And it's a ski resort. And I've got Lane Tucker with me. And Lane, you are the general manager of Eagle Point Resort in Southern Utah. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm technically the operations manager. So I handle anything dealing with like our marketing, our guests, our cash flow, everything that way.
Great, great. Operations manager. So you're in charge of a lot of things. So I'm excited to chat with you about that today. We're excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Well, there's a couple of questions that we ask at the beginning of every show with every guest, just to make sure that we kind of get the conversation flowing a little bit. And so for you, I also want to ask you the question, what is your dream destination? If you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Anywhere in the world, I would actually love to go back somewhere I've been. So I'd love to go back to Bulgaria and ski there again. I skied in Bulgaria with my father in 2007. At Bonsko Ski Resort and at a really small ski resort outside of the capital called Vitosha. And that was a great experience, even though the snow wasn't the best. So I'd love to go back there on a really good snow year.
Okay, so we haven't gotten Bulgaria yet. that's a really unique destination. Tell me a little bit more about why it was such a special experience for you.
Well, I lived there for a few years before, did never have a chance to ski, brought my dad back with me, and we went back and did a little tour of the country, but our main goal was to ski. Bonsko is one of their largest resorts out there, and it was amazing to see the European style of skiing, but without being in the Alps, so you're completely and totally surrounded by a million different people. You still have a lot of people from around Europe, so there's still a lot of languages. It was still really fun. The cultural experience was neat. Having lived there, I spoke the language, so there was a connection, and I was able to get some inside, you know, the hometown scoop of where to ski from the locals. Since I could speak the language, it helped out a lot.
Nice, nice. Okay, so you've been skiing your whole life then?
Yeah, I think I started at 8, and all my siblings started at like 3. So, you know, but being the oldest, there was a disadvantage, and my parents were not in the right capability to start me that young.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's funny. I'm the oldest as well, and it's like, my little brother lives a completely different life than I ever did. It's like he doesn't even have the same parents.
Yeah. Yep. That's how it goes.
Yeah. But I guess there's drawbacks to being spoiled as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, okay. So you would go back to Bulgaria if you could. Would it be a ski trip entirely? Would you do the tourism side of it too? Or are you thinking, man, I'd go back and I would just hit the slopes for a week?
I would probably go back and hit the slopes for a majority of it. But the cool thing about going to a ski resort is you ski during the day and then you come, you've got a lot of touristy stuff to do in the evening. So I loved going and like hitting up the restaurants and seeing what we could still see. I can't really ski for a full week every single day without, you know, getting way too beat. I wish I could again, but I just can't do that anymore. So I would definitely okay. try to get some of our, some of the touristy things going, visit some of the, I like the history. So I would love to go see some of the old monasteries and
Okay.
Some of the historical things that they've got throughout the country, because that stuff was really cool when I was living there before. I was able to see some of that.
Awesome. And you mentioned that you would go try different restaurants and stuff. What kind of food do they serve in Bulgaria? I have no idea.
It's a lot of like a potato base. Like one of my favorite basic meals is something called a moussaka, and it's a flour and egg, meat and potatoes casserole with some unique spices, and that's something I would love to get again. And they've got a special cheese called sirine, and that is one that I still really miss because it's like a feta, but stronger and
okay.
A little better. It's just got a little different taste to it.
Huh. All right. Bulgarian food. There you go, everybody. You didn't expect to learn about Bulgarian food on today's podcast.
Yeah.
All right, Lane, tell me a little bit about your background and how you ended up at Eagle Point Resort.
Okay, so I was a ski instructor my senior year of high school. I was living in Richfield, Utah, which is another central Utah town, and I worked at Elk Meadows at the time, which is the previous name for Eagle Point. I left there, went off to college. I was going to college at Weber State my first year, and ended up teaching skiing at Brighton. I ended up being at Brighton for 8 or 9 seasons. And then in 2010, a friend of mine who I worked with at Elk Meadows was speaking with my dad and said, "Hey, they're still looking for management people down at Eagle Point." And we're like, "The what?" And so we talked to him. They're like, "Oh yeah, they're revitalizing the old Elk Meadows and they're bringing it together. And you should apply. They're looking for a rental shop manager." And I had also been working in rental shops and in tuning shops while I was a ski instructor. And so I came down and applied in September, and I was hired the end of September, and I started working for the resort as a rental shop manager in October of 2010. And that was our first season. And then that following year, I had a lift ride with the owner, Shane Gadbaugh, and he commented that, you know, he's going to be looking at making some management rearrangements and would like to put me as the operations manager and move the current operations manager to a mountain manager. And that's how I got into that role. And I've been there, we're going on, this will be our 10th season. So I've been the operations manager for 9 of those seasons.
Wow. And, you know, when you got that new role, that's around the time that you and I met, I think it was fairly soon after you became the operations manager. Is that right?
Yeah. I remember we met down at the park in Beaver towards the end of that summer to talk marketing.
That's right. Well, it's been a long time. I was fairly early in my career at that point, and you were fairly early in your role, and it's kind of fun to see how our roles and experiences have grown and evolved since that time.
Yeah, it has been such a wonderful experience being at the resort, going from one stage to the next and year after year, and our capability to grow and see what we have potential to still do.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about Eagle Point Resort. What makes it unique? I know that it was originally called Elk Meadows. I can't remember exactly what the details were between when Elk Meadows went away and Eagle Point came to be. So maybe a brief refresher on that, but then what makes Eagle Point unique and what do you love about it?
Okay. So a brief history. It had originally started, and I can't remember the exact years, my apologies, but in the mid to early 70s as Mount Holly. And it was just the section of the mountain that we refer to as the Tusher side, because it's the Tusher Ridge. And that's where the steeps are. Right now, that's where our Hoodoos and Delano Drop and our more fun skiing. And then in the early 80s, Elk Meadows started as a separate ski resort above the other resort, geographically above on the highway. So there's two separate resorts. They then merged in the mid to late 80s as Elk Meadows. That went until 2002, and then it was shut down. And then they tried to privatize it between 2002 and 2010. That didn't work out. The resort went on the chopping block. Shane and some partners were able to pick up the resort in 2009. And then in 2010, we opened. So December 15th of 2010. And what makes it amazing and unique is what we've been able to do with it. It's a small town resort feel. We have a lot of hospitality with it, and we try to keep that. So even though we're getting guests from California, Nevada, Utah, we're bringing people all in to come to our destination, it's still a hometown feel. We still want you to feel like you walked into the country store, and we're happy to have you there. And then the other unique thing is our operating schedule and how we run and maintain overhead. So we run from Friday through Monday. So it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for a majority of our season. That helps us keep low overhead costs and keep the resort running.
Now that's pretty unique, isn't it? There's not a lot of ski resorts that are 4-day operations, right?
No, there's not a ton of them. There are a few, but they all have some uniqueness as to why they do it, and that schedule's just worked great for us, and it gives us the opportunity to do our other really unique thing, where you can rent the mountain for private events Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that you guys could do that. That's great.
Yeah. So you can come in as a corporation or as a private party and be like, all right, we're going to come in and we're going to rent the resort, and we're going to add food to it. We've got lodging available. We can cover anything you want to do. We can make it work.
Are you allowed to say what corporations or organizations, or give us an example of what type of organizations have done that?
Yeah. So we've done probably the largest overtaking, I guess we would call it, would be Love Your Melon. They're a wonderful company. They do a lot of funding of research with kids with cancer, and they were a wonderful group to bring in. They brought in 150 college students from across the country to come in and ski. They brought in concerts. They brought in, you know, custom meal ideas and custom pretty much anything. I mean, we had Big and Rich performed in our lodge for that group. And it was an amazing event for Beaver and to have all of them come up and participate in all of that. They got to ski with just their group. You know, the whole mountain was open to them. And then they were able to also do conference work. So they had the partners that they work with fundraising came in and did presentations. Kids that were benefited from their efforts were able to come in and talk to them and share their stories. Families were able to come in and share their stories. So that was probably the largest one that we've had, and it was amazing. I mean, we went so far as we brought in a petting zoo.
Wow.
They wanted something unique, and we're like, all right, let's do it. We had horseback riding in a petting zoo in the middle of winter. It was great.
Wow.
Other groups we've had, we have a doctor's office. It's a private doctor's practice that comes up every year out of Las Vegas, and they bring a lot of their employees as an incentive for sales and productivity. We've had we've done private birthday parties for people. We've also done it for weddings. People will rent it out in the middle of winter for a wedding, and they get married, and then they all go ski, and then they have their party and reception. We've done quite a bit there, and we have anything you can really dream of, we can make it a possibility. You know, and of course, cost is factored into that. But if you really want it, we can make it work.
That's amazing. I mean, there can't be that many ski resorts that allow you to rent out the entire resort.
I don't know of any.
That's a pretty unique selling point. Very cool. And what an interesting way to take advantage of an abbreviated operating schedule. And instead of just being, you know, shut down for those days, you actually turn it into a profit center. I think that's a pretty unique use of that time.
Yeah. And it's been wonderful for us. The times we're able to do that, it's definitely a boost in our revenue. And the only thing that people don't like is it slightly affects our powder Fridays. You know, you get a Wednesday storm and somebody's already skied it on Thursday. The people coming up to ski our powder Fridays are like, oh man, it's already been skied.
Yeah. Then it's like, well, you're welcome to rent it out on a powder day if you'd like.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we've had some groups, we've had some ski clubs be like, how much leeway do we need? If we see a good storm coming in on Tuesday night, can we just call you up and rent it? And we're like, that would be great. But yes. Staffing wise, but if you can plan it a little bit better than that, then yeah, we can do something.
Man. Well, that's really cool. I wasn't aware of that development with you guys, that you've created the opportunity to rent out the resort. I think that's a great thing that makes Eagle Point unique. As far as my experience at Eagle Point, I think what makes it unique to me is that you guys have, so there's two resorts in Southern Utah. There's a resort in Vegas, and there's a couple of resorts in Southern California. And you guys have some of the more expert terrain in that group of resorts. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
So I think, you know, the thing that has kind of stood out to me with Eagle Point is that if you want the Salt Lake City or Park City ski experience, but you don't want to fight the crowds and you still want expert terrain, Eagle Point is the place to go, at least as far as I see it.
Yeah, and that's, you can get as much vertical skiing in at Eagle Point as you can at some of the larger resorts up in Salt Lake, just for the fact that you're not waiting in a 20-minute lift line. You're not waiting 2 hours to get up the canyon. And you can just keep making laps. Where some of the other resorts, it's just that. You make a lap and then you stand in line. And then you make a lap and then you stand in line. We actually have people coming in to rest. You know, it's like, man, I just did like 8 laps and it's been 2 hours. So I need to take
That's a
break.
A completely different ski experience.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you know, most of our listeners are destinations, and a lot of the destinations that listen to our podcast have a ski resort within the destination. And so one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on, not only because you're a unique ski resort, but also because I know you guys have to work fairly closely with your destination, which is Beaver County, Utah. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you guys work together. And what I'm really trying to do is educate the destinations that listen to us on what does an attraction like a ski resort need from the destination to be successful?
So like a perfect example, I'm in meetings right now and the county has brought me in on boards to help with our marketing plan, our 10-year plan that we're working on right now. Like how do we make this destination a better destination? And being a part of that on the resort side has been great. You know, we're looking to help get people not only to our doors, but we don't have everything that people want. What can we do through town to get people up here in an organized way? What can we do to get people up here at the resort who want to be here and who are willing to come back in other seasons? I mean, because we're not just a ski resort. We've got mountain biking. We've got this. So how do we make that work with what's available throughout the county? And that's what we're working on right now. And that's a step that the county's taking And I got to get a shout out to Michelle Evans. She is the tourism director down here in Beaver County, and she has been pushing for these things to try to get us all together and on board so that not only is the ski resort as an attraction bringing people to the county, but what else can we do to help bring people to the resort through the county, yeah. and vice versa? What can the county provide that the resort may not have available?
I might just rapid fire a couple of questions for you about the dynamic between you and the DMO or the destination. And maybe just give me a quick answer to each one as we go through. But first of all, you mentioned you guys are having meetings about how the destination can better support getting people in an organized way up the canyon. Do they help with transit in any way, city buses or something like that, taking people up to the resort?
Not currently. Beaver is a small enough county and an area that there is no public transportation, unless you count borrowing your neighbor's car or horse. but they don't. Mainly what they're doing there is we're working on wayfinding so that it's easy to navigate.
Oh, that was my next question. So they're providing or working on providing wayfinding signs to help people get up to the resort and not get lost in the middle of town.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. What about, do you guys have any funding programs where the county is actually, because in some cases it makes just as much sense for you, the ski resort, to run the advertising and be supported by the destination as opposed to the destination running advertising that features you, but is kind of promoting the destination, right? So how do you guys work that dynamic?
So are you talking like grant money or?
Yeah. Do you get any grant money from them, or do you guys partner and put your money together to run a campaign, or how do you work together with funds specifically?
Okay. Yeah. So we use a Utah Office of Tourism grant, that the county will match. And then as a joint partnership, the county and Eagle Point go to the state in order to get funds. Those funds are used, a part of that is those funds are used for out-of-state advertising. And we do a lot of our own, but we also partner with the county. So when the county has ad space purchased, they will come to us and say, for example, we have radio ads available. Do you have events coming up? When would you like us to donate that portion of our ad service to Eagle Point, and what can we do for that?
Okay, so they will kind of put together the media plan, and they'll come to you and say, hey, you can have this ad that's a component of the media plan, or you can have this 2-week flight on radio or that type of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Very cool. What challenges should DMOs be aware of as they're trying to support a ski resort? Like, what do you wish they understood? And maybe not even, maybe your DMO is doing a great job with it, but in general, what do you think destinations need to understand better to support a ski resort within their destination?
Oh, that's a hard one. Because like I said, I think Michelle's doing a wonderful job. It's hard for a DMO because, being the county, to be fair with everybody, but you also need to lean on your largest assets. And so spreading that stuff out proportionately is something that I think sometimes goes unnoticed because everyone's trying to be fair to everybody, but that's not always the most correct way to do the promoting.
Well, I think you bring up an interesting point there specifically, because I know a lot of destinations struggle with this, is they'll have a big attraction, whether it's a ski resort or a national park or a state park or whatever, right? There's such an inordinate or inequitable amount of traffic coming to one area, and yet every stakeholder kind of wants a piece of the pie as far as the destination's budget goes. And so that is a difficult thing for them to navigate. My philosophy on that is that all boats kind of rise in the tide, right? And so if you're able to get your main attraction more traffic, the other attractions within the county, you can't ski 24 hours a day. You just can't do it, right?
Yeah.
So other attractions will get an increase in traffic just based on the additional traffic that comes to the main attraction. That's at least my theory on it.
No, and that we see that. I mean, take a gas station, for example. You know, we've got a gas stations on our north and south interchanges. When the resort was shut down, Main Street was not getting traveled as much by out-of-town visitors. And gas stations prices were only good out there. Now there's a rise in gas prices and everything. When we have a bad year, it goes down and trickles down to everybody else. So I totally agree, and you can see the numbers that as the tide rises, all boats float higher. So
great. What about, you know, working with other businesses within your destination? You obviously have to kind of play nice with the other businesses in the county. And I'm sure that probably is easy for you in most cases, but you know, what other cooperative efforts do you have with businesses in the area?
So one thing that we've done is we've made our season pass. We've gone to local businesses to try to get people to visit them. And they offer discounts for our season pass holders. So,
oh, that's great.
So yeah, we've got, you know, one is the Beaver Chevron and the Dairy Queen on the South Interchange. They are a partner. And so if you go in and show your season pass, you get a discount on your gas and you get a discount at the Dairy Queen. So that's just one example. We've got others throughout town. Soda Fix, and trying to think of any off the top of my head. My head's going blank right now. But
a question I have is to get those going, was that just legwork? Like, did you just have to go down and see everybody, visit with them, engage with them, and ask them to get involved and be a partner? Or was that by email? What was your process for that?
I'm a face-to-face person. So I went down and met with each one of them and said, hey, this is what we're thinking. We want to support you because we know that you're supporting us by sending business this way too. What can we do? And so we just came to some agreements on that, and that seemed to work the best for everybody.
Makes sense. I like the face-to-face aspect of it. I think, you know, when they actually see that you want to come in and have a relationship and be a partner, I think that goes a long way. So cool that you guys are putting that together. Have you gotten good feedback on those programs from your season pass holders?
Not any numerical data. It's good. People are like, oh, cool. I can use this here. I can use that there. But I don't have the numbers to back exactly what's happening.
Yeah. So as opposed to having like a specific ROI number or anything like that, it's more along the lines of giving that season pass holder peace of mind and a better customer experience, right?
Yeah. And it's just people feel happy when they're like, oh, okay, I get a little bit more. It's more bang for your buck.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Tell me a little bit about how you at Eagle Point measure your success. So how, obviously ski numbers is one thing, but as a whole, how are you guys measuring how you're performing?
Ski numbers is giant for us. And then, you know, we look at revenue. We've had years where our market has changed, and we see with that market change that there's our ski numbers maybe a little bit lower than the previous year, but our revenue's up. So it helps us kind of tune into finding where our marketing money needs to be spent, because that's, you know, what it comes down to. We want to promote an uncrowded resort, but we want to make revenue. So,
yeah, it's an interesting balance, right? It's like, uh-huh, we want the experience to stay the same, but we obviously need to make more money as we go, right?
Yeah. And so by finding those market niches that we can say, okay, this family from this area is spending more, what can we do to entice them for returns, and what can we do to entice them to bring their friends in the same demographic?
Okay, so how is Eagle Point doing? Are you guys trending up year over year? Are you growing? Are you kind of just maintaining? What's happening with Eagle Point right now?
We're trending up right now. We've been putting things together. We're trending up to the point where our focus right now has been some developments in the area to increase heads in beds. You know, we need more beds so we can get more of the destination visitor who's going to come and spend, you know, a day and a night or a couple nights and a couple days skiing. So we have been pushing our limits on our lodging availability. So we've been working on development for more lodging.
Great. And is Eagle Point going to actually own the lodging, or are you working with lodging partners?
We're working with lodging partners mainly. Aspen Equity has been developing an area up at the resort called Aspen Crest. We're putting in new twin homes, which is going to be high-end area for people to purchase their own homes and then have the opportunity to still put those within the rental pool because they're all ski-in, ski-out homes. Then the condos that are in the village area that we have, you know, we're still encouraging people to put them in the rental pool and to help with that. We've got some other things in the works. I don't know if I'm able to talk about right now though.
we'll wait and see. That's no problem. Yeah. But you know, it sounds like you don't have a demand issue. You have a supply issue as far as lodging goes up there.
Yeah. As one person put it, we can't really cast a bigger net because it's not going to fit all the fish.
Got it. Well, that's interesting. You know, most people are focused on more. You guys are right now hey, we're getting more. Now we need to build the infrastructure.
Yeah. And we've got a really good base infrastructure for the resort itself. And we're looking to enhance that. And because we don't want to overbuild and underperform. We want to keep that as a balance. And it's hard. That's a hard balance because it's a lot of the chicken and the egg scenario.
Totally. Yeah, which one do we do first, right? Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, and we're going to kind of start to wrap up here, but tell me a little bit about, you're obviously competing with Southern California resorts. People have to travel a decent distance to get to you guys from Southern California or from Vegas. So tell me what you're doing to stand out and make sure that the message is communicated effectively.
So a lot of what we've been doing is the uncrowded and the price point. Because you could travel from Southern California to a larger resort in California, and you're about a 7-hour travel and about a 7 to 7.5 hour travel, depending on where you're exactly in Southern California you are, to get to Eagle Point. But if you go to the larger resort, which has some amazing things to it, your ticket price tag is $100+. And for a family of four, you add ski school, you add rentals for younger kids or even yourself, and you're adding lodging, that's thousands and thousands of dollars that you're pushing like $4,000 for a ski weekend. Coming to us, you've got a little extra time sometimes, like I said, half hour to an hour longer, but with our tickets hovering somewhere right around $50 a day ticket and our lodgings in the $100 and for a small one bedroom unit that can fit a family of four comfortably, you're looking at $120 to $150. And so your expense is way lower and your experience is way higher.
Makes sense. Okay, great. Is there anything, Lane, that I haven't asked you that you feel like would benefit our listeners to hear?
The snow's great here. I mean, you know, the greatest snow on earth, extends all the way into Southern Utah too. It's not just the Wasatch.
Great. Well, Lane, this has been really insightful. I've appreciated having you on. I feel like a lot of these destinations that have a ski resort within them, there's a lot of different dynamics that they need to be aware of. And I think you shed some light on those today. So thanks a lot for your time.
Anytime. I appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Well, everybody, this has been the Destination Marketing Podcast with Adam Stoker. And I want to remind everybody about our LinkedIn group. It's called Destination Marketers. It's growing every day, and we have more and more people sharing insight and ideas in the group, and we want to invite all of you to join, participate, and help each other kind of grow and get better and be better educated on marketing as we go. Same goes for our Facebook group. It's also called Destination Marketers, so check that out as well. And then I also want to ask, if you're enjoying the podcast, and hopefully you are, if you've continued to listen, please leave us a review on iTunes or whatever podcast outlet you're using to download those, because it really does make a difference in how easy we are to find and our ability to grow. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.